And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
Welcome to 5000 to 1, the Athletics Leicester City podcast. I'm Rob Tanner. Joining me, as he did last night as we watched Leicester City's home defeat to Aston Villa, is former skipper Matt Elliott. Matt, how are you feeling this morning?
I'm okay, Rob. All the better for seeing you yesterday, but slightly disappointed, as will all Leicester City followers or supporters or people who take an interest. It was a poor result and not a brilliant performance overall, but we'll talk about that in a minute.
No, absolutely. Well, let's get straight into that Villa defeat. Third home defeat on the trot in all competitions, and I can't recall that happening for a long, long time. It's a similar sort of situation, isn't it, really? I mean, they're a lack of cutting edge in the final third, and obviously without Jamie Vardy as well, the talisman striker. It's a perennial problem, isn't it? When Jamie's not about, what is their plan B? Where can they turn? Last night, they turned to a guy that hasn't played since January 2018 in Islam Slimani. I'm quite surprised, really. It feels like a backward step, but I guess with the inability of bringing in another striker in the transfer window, Rodgers hasn't got much choice. He's got this striker knocking around on big money. He might as well get him involved.
Bit of a blast from the past. You're sort of pinching yourself thinking, hang on, I've seen this somewhere before. But and also, not so long ago, sort of Brendan Rodgers was slightly dismissive of Slimani's chances of being involved in the squad. I think he envisaged him leaving the club, but if not permanently, on yet another loan situation. But wasn't to be. And then you know, you have to utilise what you've got with you, haven't you? And I thought, listen, I was trying to look at it in a positive way yesterday at the game, in terms of he does give you another option. He does give you more physicality in and around the penalty box if decent balls are delivered. The rest of his game is not really one that Brendan Rodgers would see as a way forward for him, really, is it? And as you say, there is a shortage. Once Vardy's out of the picture, there's a problem. There are a number of ways he could go. Iheanacho, the obvious one. Some people might think Jose Perez, but again, he sort of fails to convince as well, doesn't he? You know, I know he's playing, some would say, slightly out of position, or you do have Slimani there, or do you pair a couple of them up to make up for any sort of deficits that they've got? But it is a worry. It is a worry, isn't it, with the amount of games that are coming thick and fast soon as well, both in the league and the Europa League. I mean, Leicester are not the only team to have that problem, are they, Rob? It's having that secondary striker who's of sufficient enough quality to replace, be there an injury or a suspension or whatever, you know, the main striker. Because more often than not, it's just that lone role. And you have to look for players that can play dual roles, really, don't you? You know, the likes of Aubameyang.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the thing with the big problem for Leicester is that they've set up to play the Vardy way. And Rodgers has always said he doesn't like a big target man. He likes mobile strikers that are running behind, that will cause defensive problems. So when they had Slimani on for that final 20 minutes or so yesterday, they weren't putting any crosses in the box. They're not used to just lumping crosses into the box in desperation when Jamie Vardy's in there. But talk about Kelechi Iheanacho. That was his big opportunity. What did you think of Kelechi? I thought he started reasonably brightly, got one decent shot off in the first half. But besides that, it didn't seem to get involved in the game.
He shows glimpses, doesn't he? And you're willing him to do well, but you're not confident necessarily that he's going to go on a regular goal-scoring streak, are you really? And his effectiveness tends to fade as the game goes on. Not always, but you know, sort of general perception, really. And it was a little bit how Leicester's performance in general was last night. You know, they started well enough, didn't they? And a few dangerous situations, which Aston Villa just about dealt with. You know, they were sort of scrambling back defensively on a few occasions. Barnes was picking up good positions. Perez, but Leicester never really looked like penetrating, did they? You know, goalkeeper Martinez was very rarely brought into action, and eventually they sort of ran out of ideas a little bit, I think. And it's easy to label, you know, Iheanacho's role as not being effective enough, or his performance, but you've got to be provided with ammunition as well in decent positions, and it didn't happen often enough last night, that's for sure.
Well, it wasn't the easiest game to watch in the world, was it? It was very, very scrappy, very bitty, very physical. But one thing I thought to myself as I was watching it was, Leicester City too nice? Because every time there was a challenge on a Villa player, they'd be yelling, screaming, because obviously we can hear them in an empty stadium. Remonstrating with the referee, demanding more action than just the free kick, getting around him, being proactive in terms of trying to influence the referee. Leicester sort of just get on with it. And I just wonder whether they're a little bit too nice, Matt.
Yeah, it's a fine line, isn't it? It's sort of a double-edged sword, because you want your team to be disciplined, but at the same time, as you say, you don't want the other teams getting away with things they shouldn't be. And certainly Villa, you know, consciously made an effort, didn't they, to contest every decision. They were appealing for any sort of challenge, really. You know, it was bordering on embarrassing at times, but they had no shame, did they? They persevered with it. And I think, to an extent, it had a little bit of an effect on the referee, you know, and that's semi-understandable. I know they shouldn't be affected, but you know, if you've got teams, constant managers and players constantly appealing, in the end, I know you get slightly annoyed with them as a human being, but in the end, you'll start going, well, maybe they're right. I'll give you that one sort of thing. And I think Leicester could counter that a little bit by, as you say, not being too nice. I was thinking to myself, what would I do in that situation? I'd be getting on, because I could realise Villa are getting on at the ref. They're trying to apply the pressure. They're trying to, a bit of kidology, you know, just to make sure that the referee knows that you know, he's aware of that. Ref, you know what they're doing there? Yeah, that one was a foul. Okay, we'll give you that one. But don't let them sway you into thinking, ref. Don't let them get on at you. So you got to counter it. And then, you know, play little games with the referee's mind as well. You know, make sure he's on your side as well. Because despite what people think or people admit to, they do get influenced, definitely. You know, and even more so when there's crowds involved. But I think Aston Villa seemed to sort of enhance their efforts on the referee, didn't they? Because the supporters weren't there. You know, they made their opinions loud and clear. And I wouldn't say Leicester weren't physical enough last night. I thought they put enough commitment into challenges and application was there. But a little bit in terms of mentality, like you say, they're not responding and not playing the game, for want of a better phrase, I think they could do that a little bit more. Yeah, be a little bit more edgy and ruthless, maybe.
Well, let's talk about one of the big positive, well, the big positive out of the night, the debut of 19-year-old Wesley Fofana, the young lad from St Etienne. £32 million they spent on him, and he only played 30 senior games. We were hearing a lot of things about this kid's got so much talent, so much potential, he's going to be a big star in the future. But in the back of your mind, you're thinking, that's a lot of money to spend on a 19-year-old who's only played 30 senior games. But I have to say, it's one of the most impressive debuts that I've seen for a very long, long time. He looked so assured. He was so, I've never seen a spring like that, aerially. He looks like he's never going to get beaten. It was very impressive to see, wasn't it?
Yeah, looked good from the off, didn't he? Just slotted straight in there. It was everything you were hoping and expecting to see for a signing, you know, of that magnitude, you know, in terms of how much he cost. But I don't, all the reports that you'd heard beforehand were that he wasn't just a prospect, that he is now a very good player. And I wasn't that surprised when I saw it, really. What I'd been told about and what I'd heard materialised in front of me, sort of thing. And he was very impressive, wasn't he? His pace was instantly, you know, recognisable. You could see that. But also his understanding of situations. There were a couple of times where he could read that the striker was going to drift into offside. But he just matched them up to the necessary point, then just held his line a little bit, let Watkins run offside. And a couple of times he had to match him and read the situation. He dropped in early. And his pace, you know, well, didn't get him out of trouble, but pace made him deal with the situation extremely easily. And like you say, amount of headed clearances was good. Not only was he in the right place at the right time, he was good leap on him, made challenges, you know, nice and aggressive with it, comfortable on the ball. You know, you would not have known it was his debut, would you, if you hadn't been told. And yeah, that was a major plus, wasn't it? You know, to get him straight into the fold, because by the sounds of it, if Soenchu reportedly could be out for up to 3 months, he's going to be very much needed over the coming weeks.
Well, yeah, that was another piece of bad news on a bad night for Leicester City, wasn't it? Soenchu, he's an abductor muscle that's come off the bone. He's going to be out for 3 months, along with Wilfred Ndidi. The injuries have been stacking up. With Jamie Vardy, we expect to be back for the Arsenal game. He's going to miss Thursday's Europa League game against Zorya Luhansk. They're just taking a precaution. But the worry for me, and this is going back to the early point, is that this is a reoccurring problem that Jamie's had over the last few years, this little calf that tightens up. He got a bit of a kick on it in training on Friday. He had the scan. The scan revealed it isn't too bad, but they've taken a precaution not to risk a tear, to leave him out of the Villa game and the European game as well. So, but the injuries do seem to be mounting up. Johnny Evans, there were doubts about him coming into the game as well. And the workload placed on the players, Matt, how do you feel coming from a generation where, you know, you just had to get on with it, suck it up and just get on with the games twice a week, whatever, you just battle through. But the game is played at such an intensity now that they seem to be picking up these knocks and these little tears and pulls. It's real headache for managers.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
It is a problem, isn't it? Because a lot of people or players get castigated for saying, oh, I feel a bit tired and it's only, you know, 6 weeks or so into the season. But, you know, they're forgetting the load that they're put under. Like you say, the international fixtures, the relatively, I know there was a huge break. It's a different sort of program and regime for them as well, I suppose, over that period, because, you know, the analysts and the backroom staff, they're working in sort of new territory as well as the players. So it sort of upset their rhythms to an extent. And then, you know, players are playing a lot of games, aren't they, basically? You know, they're coming thick and fast in the early part of the season. And it seems to be taking its toll with a few. It's a big worry, really, when you think it's the nature of the injuries as well, isn't it? You know, the muscle tissue. You know, whether it's the muscle itself or it's coming off the abductor, as Wilfred Ndidi and Soenchu, you know, they're quite unusual. They're not unheard of, but they're quite unusual injuries. But for both of them to suffer that, you know, it's a worry. And also with James Maddison, I'm not entirely sure of the nature of his situation, but I was surprised that, you know, he was deemed not ready to start. Last night, when I thought, you know, he's had long enough, you would think, to recover over the international period, but maybe that's an ongoing issue that he's got to nurture and treat as he goes along and sort of look after a little bit, which is another worry. But yeah, you look at it on the face of it, Leicester put out a more than decent team last night, but they are missing their main men, and that will have an effect without a doubt. You know, there's 4, 5, 6 key figures who are unavailable at the moment. That's going to hurt any team. So it's going to be a massive effort coming up over the next few weeks with both competitions they're involved in.
Well, certainly starting on Thursday, Zorya Luhansk, the Ukrainian side, first ever Europa League, although, of course, it used to be the UEFA Cup, but Europa League clash for Leicester City, so their debut in that competition. But you remember the days of the UEFA Cup, Matt. What were they like? What was it like playing in
Europe? I thought this might get a mention.
Oh, there were some good times, though, wasn't there? Some memorable nights under the lights?
Yeah, not enough, unfortunately, because as bad luck would have it, although it was an honour to play against the level of team that we did, we didn't want to play Atletico Madrid or Red Star Belgrade, as it turned out in 2001. We didn't want to play them in the first round. Can't we play them in the quarterfinals? That was the plan. But we came up short on both counts, but made a decent fist of it, particularly in the first time against Atletico Madrid. You know, what an occasion that was for us, going up against the likes of Janinho, who had not long before been a superstar for Middlesbrough, and Christian Vieri was in their team. I think he was the most expensive striker in the world at the time. A lad called Kiko played up front for Spain. And all these big names, and we found ourselves pitted against them, and we had the temerity to take the lead, didn't we? And Ian Marshall scored the opener, got that his hamstring pinged, I think, and it came off 5 minutes later. Ended up frustratingly losing in a bit of a dramatic affair at Filbert Street with a few dubious refereeing decisions, to say the least. But they were good times. They were good times. But that was all about the sort of novelty and the experience of being in a European competition.
What's it like, though? Is it a different type of football coming up against a continental side? But got to bear in mind that things have moved on, and the majority of the Leicester side are from the continent as well. But it seems like, do you have to adjust to a different style of football, different style of refereeing?
Refereeing, yes. That was certainly, I touched on that just now, and I think, I don't think our referee ever refereed again in Europe after the second leg, or something bizarre like that, because there was a lot of discussion over his performance. But yeah, I suppose, yeah, like you say, things have changed. It's a different scenario for, again, this current team, isn't it? I mean, we were going into it, as it happened with who we drew, Atletico Madrid, who weren't one of the giants of Europe, but they were a force in Europe, you know, well-renowned and experienced. They had all the star players, etc., and yeah, we were sort of battling away against the odds. So, but it was a bit of a learning curve, I think. You know, but we were sort of huffing and puffing, and perhaps got a little bit excited early on, taking the lead, not realizing, you know, it's a two-legged affair. Although we'd experienced that in domestic competition before, but yeah, it's just a different feel, isn't it? A different mentality, a little bit. But Leicester go into this group stage in the Europa League. They've got to be favourites, really, haven't they? You know, all due respect to the other teams, and they're going to be a tough opposition, you know, whatever, because it's a big occasion for all those teams as well. In particular, Zoraida Luhansk coming to Leicester on Thursday. They're going to be well charged for it, aren't they? But Leicester have got some of the players have had experience, like you say, the more continental players involved in the setup, and I think they're a lot better equipped than we were to deal with the occasion this time around.
Well, exactly. And the games are going to be coming thick and fast as well, because after Luhansk, it's Arsenal away on Sunday, then Athens away in the midweek the following week, then Leeds away, and then Braga. I mean, there's some really tough fixtures coming up. We've already touched on the fact that the squad is wilting a little bit in terms of niggles and injuries and stuff like that. This is going to be a really testing time for Leicester. How do you think Brendan Rodgers should approach this in terms of the utilising his squad here? Because he can't be risking major injuries to key players, but also he's got to take the Europa League seriously, because after battling so hard to get in there last season, you want to give a good account of yourself on this stage.
Yeah, exactly. It's a dilemma, isn't it? You know, for any manager. And ordinarily, perhaps you could envisage, you know, a number of injuries later on down the line in the season. But even at this early stage, there's a multitude of players, key players that we've mentioned already that are not available for this heavy fixture list that is coming up. That's sort of backed up by, well, you know, the Christmas period as well is always condensed. And then you've got the Europa League as well. It's a tough proposition, isn't it? And I think, you know, that previously you looked at other teams, like Wolves, you know, you have to take your hat off to them, because you thought, well, they struggled initially, didn't they, when the early part of the season, I think it was last year. But they managed to sort of steady the ship and came through nice and solid, because it's a testing time, isn't it? I think it's in new waters for not necessarily the manager, but the players, how to deal with that Thursday, Sunday, the regularity of it, chopping and changing of the squad, because the best will in the world, even if there were no injuries, you can't keep churning out that same team. And it's a real problem, isn't it? And but you've got to find that balance. You can't be going out putting out some people might deem effectively a second string 11 in the Europa League, and then you come unstuck, and then there's criticism flying at you from all angles, isn't it? So, you know, you have to have that quality in the team, but at the same time, you blend it and mix it around, and getting yourselves up for, you know, Europa League, a big occasion, and then you're travelling away maybe to Athens, and then you've got Wolves at the weekend, you know, recharging yourself. It's a big test on the character and the mentality of the players, and hopefully one that they'll be up for.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Well, let's finish, Matt, on a look at the Arsenal game on Sunday. I mean, last time Leicester City were on the road, incredible victory. We talked about the poor form at home, but to go to Man City and win 5-2... How do you think they'll be approaching this Arsenal game? Do you think it'll be a similar sort of approach to the Man City game in terms of the sitting deep and trying to counter? And do you think confidence would have taken a big knock over the last couple of weeks?
Well, obviously, you know, losing games, it doesn't do you too many favours in terms of confidence. But, you know, it wasn't so long ago, was it, Man City? You've got to have a balanced view, haven't you? You've got to be realistic. You've got to have genuine... You know, this is where you've got to put in the hard graft in your own purposes and have genuine faith in your ability as an individual. And then you work hard as a group together. You know what you are capable of. There might be times you just drop below that level, of course, and, you know, you come up short a little bit, but make those occasions few and far between. Arsenal, you know, always been a decent side. Over recent years, Leicester have had some good results up against them at home. Very rarely get something away, do they? And it would be nice to change that. But they're a team who's sort of looking to turn things around, aren't they, under Arteta? You know, by all accounts, they're looking quite impressive. The squad has got a lot of quality in it. But you look at it, Leicester's still fourth at the moment, despite losing the last two games. Arsenal right behind them, there's a hell of a lot to play for, so they can use that as an extra incentive as well. They don't want, you know, who they're playing at the weekend leapfrogging over them. A win would put them right back in the fray again as well. They've got to look at the positives. It's not all doom and gloom, you know. Fourth in the league after five rounds of games is a no mean achievement, but Arsenal, yeah, this is, will they go the type of game? Man City, yeah, quite. I don't think they'll go to a back three, though. I don't think they'll go back to that.
I don't think he's got much choice, as he hasn't got enough defenders to play a back three.
No,
really.
You could put Wes in there, couldn't you? Wes Morgan. Like you say, if something does happen injury-wise, then you know, you're forced into a two. I suppose you could slip Castagna in there or Fuchs if he was substitute. Justin, even. But it's too much tinkering around there, really. But I don't think it suited them against Arsenal before in the three. No. Last season, I think they, you know, have belief, have faith in that back four, and still have bodies going forward. Because You know, at times in the first half, I thought Leicester looked more comfortable in that back four than otherwise. But other than that, yeah, they're going to have to listen. They're going to have to soak up a little bit of pressure, and they're going to have to be show a bit of resolve out there. But they've got to show, more importantly, got to show the potency to go and hurt the opposition, which they struggled to do at home last night, even against Villa. Got to find this cutting edge from somewhere, with or without Vardy.
Absolutely, Matt. Matt, thank you very much for joining us again. It's going to be a busy time ahead. So stay with the podcast, 5,000 to 1. We're bringing you all the chat around Leicester City as they go over the next month to Arsenal, to Leeds, face Wolves and Liverpool, as well as their first three rounds in the Europa League. It's all going to be happening. Thank you for joining us. Join us again next time.